Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Well, it was and always is the derby on everyone's lips. Of course it is. The M23 derby. The Eagles versus the Seagulls. Mullery versus Venables in the 21st century. Hodgson versus Potter. Zaha versus Alzate. Crystal Palace versus Brighton and Hove Albion. And since Brighton returned to the top flight 2 years ago, to be fair, the spoils have been shared. One win for Palace, one win for Brighton. And as the trilogy was completed on Monday Night Football this week, who should the deciding win go to? No one. A 1-1 draw was played out at Selhurst Park. Of course it was, in the feistiest of festive fixtures. That man Zaha, so often the nemesis of Brighton over the years, cancelling out Neil Maupay's first half opener. A decent game, most probably a fair result on the complexion of the 90 minutes. And on the line now to talk all about it on this, the Brighton and Hove Albion fan show here on Love Sport, we have Adam Stenning, Albion reporter of the Argus newspaper in Brighton. How are you doing, Adam?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Great to have you on the line. First off, a Merry Christmas to you.
And to you too.
Any exciting plans for the festive period?
No, just sort of splitting my time between my own family and my girlfriend's family, yeah, so it'd be nice and busy.
Lovely stuff. Always the same, mate. Always splitting time between partners. That's what we do. Partners and families. As long as there's a 50-50 split, we're okay. Speaking of 50-50 splits, of course, 1 point apiece on Monday evening. The game between Palace and Brighton. I've talked about it there. The M23 derby. The feisty, festive fixture. A point, a fair result, do you think?
I think Albion will be disappointed not to have taken all three themselves. They dominated certainly a large, well, pretty much the whole of the first half, and you know, for a good sort of 20 minutes of that second half, they dominated as well, especially scoring that goal. And they had chances, you know, after they scored to double that lead. Lewis Dunk headed over from Pascal Gross's corner just after they scored, which could have easily made it 2-0, but he just headed over, which was a shame. And then, you know, they sort of, Palace hadn't really created many chances, and Zaha especially had been very quiet. And then, you know, he's shown onto his weaker foot, but he still pulled off an amazing strike, so that was fair play to him, really.
Yeah, not much you can do, really, when you show a man on his weaker foot like Zaha and think that you've dealt with the danger. He goes and does what he does. And I think you're right in terms of your analysis of the game. Yes, 100%. And it's kind of what we've come to expect a bit of Brighton this season, I suppose. And whilst it's been a wonderful turnaround with Graham Potter in charge, that domination of possession, the creating the chances, is all there, but it's also been the familiar story of being ultimately unable of converting those chances.
Yeah, no, it has been. I mean, of late, it has been a bit sort of better with those sort of converting the chances. I mean, Neil Maupay's been in sort of sublime form, really. 3 goals in 3 now with his goal against Palace, 7 for the season for him. So he's starting to show why Brighton has spent big on him. So really and truly, yeah, it has been a case of, you know, in some games that they haven't had that clinical sort of finisher in the final third. But I mean, Aaron Connolly's been a big miss as well. He's been out for a few games with an injury, but luckily he'll be back for tomorrow's game against Sheffield United, which will be a bonus as well to have alongside Maupay, because the two of them can be quite a handful for any defence.
Yeah, absolutely they can. Connolly, of course, bursting onto the scene with that game against Spurs. You're right, he has been a miss. In terms of Maupay, you there mention his form at the moment. That's 7 for the season now. And I think a lot of people, especially Premier League fans, wouldn't have been too aware of Maupay's credentials at Brentford last season. Of course, bang them in for them. He's very much an 18-yard box man, I think it's fair to say. Does all his magic inside that 18-yard box. I'm not going to say he's ineffective outside of the 18-yard box, but he does certainly come alive. I'd love to see his stats, actually, to see how many goals he's actually scored from outside the area. I know that Chicharito pretty much scored every single one of his goals from inside the box. Be interesting to see if it was the same with Maupay. But that's 7 goals for the season now. He's just starting to get a feel for the Premier League, isn't he?
Yeah, no, I think with any striker, it's obviously a case of finding your feet, especially with the sort of step up from the Championship to the Premier League. Can always make or break a striker in that sense. But obviously, he's young as well. He's only 23 still, so he's still a young lad as well. He's not he's got age on his side. And I think what has helped him is what he spoke about as well is Glenn Murray as well, who's obviously a veteran striker and is well known to Palace and Albion fans, obviously, for what he's done for both of those clubs in terms of his goal scoring. And how much he's helped him with his finishing, and that's starting to show in the box. I think in terms of your thing of outside and inside the box, I think from memory he's only scored one outside the box, which came against Wolves with the ball over from Dale Stevens, and he just latched onto it and got away a good effort from distance. But apart from that, he has had glimpses from distance, but as you say, he's one of those strikers that's very sharp in the box, so that's where he does the majority of his work. And I think that's testament to somebody like Glenn, as well, who's been known for his work in the box as well. He hasn't scored many from long range in his career, but he does a lot of his work in the box.
Yeah, 100%. And Murray, actually, he's only the second player after Murray to score in three consecutive Premier League games for Brighton. And you can tell that Glenn Murray is a man who's probably disappointed to not be playing, because every footballer wants to play. But you imagine that a conversation was had there between Murray and Graham Potter at the start of the season. And Potter's clearly said to him, look, you're not really in my plans. I'm going to try a new approach, a new way of playing. But you're such an integral part of this club, an integral part of this dressing room, that I want you to remain here. And like you said, that's probably really rubbed off on Mope.
Yeah, no, I think Murray always knew, I think at some point in his career, that, you know, he'd lose a bit more of that yard of pace that he wasn't exactly blessed with anyway, in terms of sort of that blistering pace. But he hasn't really had the chance to show Potter what he can do. Obviously, he scored a few goals in pre-season, and he's still very fit and he's still in shape, but it's just a case of, you know, when you've got Mope and Connolly in front of you who are, you know, blisteringly quick, and with the style that Potter plays, it doesn't really complement Murray's sort of style of play. Under Houghton, he was a regular starter because Houghton's style of play complemented a big striker who could bring the ball down and, you know, sort of bring others into play. But yeah, I think the conversation probably has been had between them at the start of the season. But I think Murray, from what I've heard from especially the other players, especially the likes of Mope and Connolly, especially, have sort of said how much of a help he's been to them, and how sort of he's not really, I think he's disappointed, but at the same time, he's trying his best to help the players out on that pitch in order, because he just wants to see the club doing as well as they can. If Mope and that are firing in the goals, then, you know, it's disappointing on his part because he's not going to get as much of a chance, but it is good for the club.
No, it absolutely is. And just to quickly go back to the game as well, I think we've spoken about this style of football under Graham Potter, of course. Roy Hodgson did say after the game, Brighton's performance was as good as any team we've seen here at Selhurst Park this season. That's quite a testament, isn't it, to the way that Brighton are playing this season?
Yeah, no, I think that's probably one of Brighton's best performances this season. They've just, you know, you wouldn't have thought they were away from home. They just dominated the game and really caused Palace problems. But it was just a shame that they couldn't, you know, double that lead. If they'd have doubled that lead, they'd have probably gone on to comfortably win that game. But it was just the case of, you know, not being able to, you know, get the chance, being clinical enough with those chances after scoring the first. And then, you know, Zaha coming up with the magic, you know, on his weaker foot. But, yeah, no, I can see why Roy Hodgson said that, because, you know, they were faultless. I spoke to Matty Ryan after the game, and he was saying that the only criticism that he had was the fact that, you know, they didn't collect the 3 points, and he said how much of a pleasure it was to watch from the back. He said it was just great football, and you speak to most of the Brighton players and they say exactly the same. It was just great football. It just was a shame they didn't get the 3 points that they wanted.
I think as well, it was the fact that Palace couldn't play the way that they set out to play as well. Hodgson said that. He said, you know, we thought that it was going to be a different game, but Brighton just played around us. And from Ryan's perspective, I guess that looked incredible, especially the goal as well. You look at the goal, Bissouma's great ball out to the right, Trossard with a first time volley of a cross, Gross with his little flick to Mope, and then one touch and bang, a great goal.
No, it was sort of, you know, as I say, Bissouma did a really good job in the absence of Dale Stevens, who we thought was going to be a really big miss, because he started, you know, all 16 games before that point and has been an integral part of Brighton's, you know, sort of midfield over the last three, especially in the Premier League, but over the last 4 or 5 years since he came to the club. But, you know, Bissouma did well there and showed that he had his chance and he took it. And I thought Trossard as well looked very good, especially his delivery into the box. And that delivery was really good. And I think Mbappe was saying it was Dan Burn just in front of him. And he was saying that Dan Burn was going to go and flick it. And he just said, I just shouted, leave it, because he knew he had the time. And in the form he was in, you were never going to bet against him not to bury that chance, really.
Yeah, it was a great finish. And Dan Burn as well, to be fair, has been an absolute revelation this season, hasn't he? Yeah. I mean, this is a player that we speak to a lot of fans on the show and they go, I remember Dan Burn as a donkey of a centre-back, but he's kind of remodelled himself as a faux left-back at the moment under Graham Potter, and he just continues to get better.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people thought he was quite a laboured sort of centre-back as well. You look at his size and you think he shouldn't be able to move that quickly. And I've seen some balls where they just ping a ball down the left wing and you think, Dan Burn's after it. I'm not sure he's going to make it. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, he does. And you just think, where's he got that pace from? But as well, his delivery for crosses is really good. He's, you know, he knows how to whip a ball in. And obviously, he's a big lad as well. So it's sort of, it must be a bit daunting for a winger thinking they've got to get past a 6'7" frame of a man. They know they can't go aerially against him, so they have to go past him. But he's very good defensively as well, so he doesn't let many people past either. So no, he has been a revelation. But there's been plenty of them. I mean, Lewis Dunk stepped up another level for under Potter since he's been given that armband. Matty Ryan at the back, in between the sticks, has been, you know, sensational, saving Albion a lot of points already this season. Adam Webster as well, he's brought in, came in against Man City for Duffy, and Duffy hasn't really got a look in since, because Webster is a great centre-half. He's sort of like Burn, just he seems to get forward, but he seems to be happy to take the ball. If he sees a space, he's happy to drive 60, 70 yards with it and have a shot if he wants to.
Yeah, and I think that, again, is the fact that Brighton, when they do spend money, obviously the club don't have as much as, you know, the established top six in the Premier League have, but when they do spend money, invariably, I mean, you can look at the likes of Lacardia, bit of a disaster. Izquierdo hasn't really played and been able to justify that price tag, but now Prupa starting to play incredibly well. Pascal Gross, you know, you mentioned there, the players that have been bought in for a lot of cash, Adam Webster, again, justifying those price tags. So whilst it's not a lot of money, it's actually money well spent. Matty Ryan, we've spoken about him a lot on the show, and the fact that I personally think he just keeps getting better and better and so quick off his line, so sharp. When you look at certain goalkeepers in the Premier League, his pace off his line, and perhaps that's because he's smaller, slightly more compact, and then you get some fans who go, oh, he's not big enough to be a top-class goalkeeper. It doesn't matter. The role of a goalkeeper has changed in recent years, and yeah, he continues to get better. Looking ahead, Adam, to the fixtures coming up, the first of which is Sheffield United, of course. Now, the big stat here is that Sheffield United haven't lost a game away from home since January, nearly 1 year since they lost away from home. But that last defeat was against Swansea last season. And who was the manager of Swansea? Graham Potter at the time. So there we go. It's done. Easy. Victory tomorrow. Done.
Well, I'd love it if you did that, but Sheffield United displayed that they are certainly have got some momentum behind them. They seem to have just carried on where they left off in the Championship and have put teams to the sword. And I think one player out there, of course, one of their ex-players, Naughty, they saw, you know, didn't really get a chance in that battle for Brighton in the Championship. And when they got promoted up, was surplus to requirements. And he's gone to prove that he probably shouldn't have been surplus to requirements, because he is proving a great sort of focal point in that midfield. Everything seems to go through him. But yeah, they will be a handful, Sheffield United. But I mean, if Albion play the way they did against Crystal Palace, it could be, if as long as they're clinical. But I mean, the form that Mbappe's in, the fact that Connolly's back, if they're both clinical, then pretty much Albion have got a good chance, if any, of getting 3 points just before Christmas and giving the fans a nice present.
Yeah, it would be nice, wouldn't it, Adam? Looking ahead again to those Christmas fixtures as well, because this is the last Brighton fan show before we kickstart again in the new year. It's Tottenham after that. Then it's Bournemouth at home, Chelsea at home. You've got Sheffield Wednesday in the Cup after the new year as well. So we've got to run a four or five fixtures there. Not the easiest.
No, I mean, well, Tottenham have obviously picked up under Jose Mourinho, and I wasn't really surprised by that. I mean, against Brighton, they just looked, I think, a bit stunned at the Amex. So that will be a tough test, especially away from home. And then Bournemouth have sort of had a bit of an up and down season, but sort of you can never discount a Bournemouth side because they can punish you if you underestimate them. Chelsea, obviously, under Frank Lampard, are starting to, you know, show that they're sort of young guns and that are able to push for a top four place, clearly. And, you know, Sheffield Wednesday are sort of doing really well in the Championship under Gary Monk, who's a very established manager with the jobs he's done at Swansea and other clubs. But and they've got some players that can really hurt Albion. So that, you know, they won't be easy, but Albion have got a big enough squad, and if they're able to sort of rotate that and use that squad well with the quality that they've got there, there's no reason why they can't, you know, look at getting, you know, they'll be trying to get as many points out of that as possible. I mean, if they can, you know, if they win that cup tie, they can beat Bournemouth at home, they can get some against Chelsea at home, you know, even a point, you know, would be great. And then, you know, anything you get from Tottenham away is a bonus. So really and truly, they'll be looking at it as a tough run of games, but with the squad and, you know, only one or two injuries, they'll be going, well, we've got a big enough squad and a good enough squad to deal with those sort of games.
And that squad, like you said, inherited and bolstered by Graham Potter, the manager. We're at the end of 2019, Adam. How are you evaluating Brighton's year and the first half a year under Graham Potter?
Well, I mean, it's been a bit of an up and down year. I think the first sort of 5 or 6 months towards the end of the season were a bit bleak. Obviously, you had the FA Cup semi-final against Manchester City, which was a bit of a highlight, but obviously it sort of ended Chris Hughton's tenure at the club, which was a shame for many fans because he was a great manager and a lovely guy as well. But it was just the club just realised it was time for a set of fresh ideas, and they identified Potter as the man to do that. And he is showing that, you know, sort of Tony Bloom, the chairman, has said that he wants the club to be a top 10 side in the future. And I mean, under Graham Potter and the way they've played so far this season, I could see that happening quite easily. So, you know, I think 2019's been a bit of a roller coaster for Brighton, been a bit of up and downs, but they're sort of getting towards that high point. So as long as they don't have a drop, as long as there's no drop and it's a straight line or an upwards curve, then it'll be brilliant.
And finally, of course, Adam, not only is it the end of 2019, it's the end of the decade. Of course, the tens, I think we call it. Is that what we call this decade, the tens? Or it's definitely not the noughties. We've moved on from the noughties. Did it ever get given a name, this decade? Is it the tens?
I don't know. I'd go with the tens, but I know that as much as you on that. I know it's not the noughties, but I'd probably call it the tens as well.
Let's stick to the tens or the teenies.
Probably just to be safe.
The teenies, maybe. The tens or the teenies, or the last decade. We'll stick to that, shall we? But of course, at the turn of the decade, Brighton still at the with Dean at the time. A lot has happened over the past 10 years or so. How would you evaluate the past 10 years? I mean, Brighton have come quite a long way, haven't they?
Yeah, I think their journey's been remarkable to think, you know, in 2010, they were just sort of winning League One under Gus Poyet, with sort of players that were sort of a mixture of sort of players that had been brought through the academy and some that had been brought in for fairly low prices that turned into be really good signings, and the sort of the amount of players that we've been blessed to see at the Amex as well. You've had the likes of Bruno, who obviously retired and is now on the coaching staff at the club, who's been a brilliant servant to the club and provided some really memorable moments. You've had players like Vicente, who, you know, many Brighton fans would never have dreamed of him ending up in a Brighton shirt, having played for Valencia in sort of the Champions League and things like that. And he sort of provided some moments of class at the Amex. And we've had some really good sort of goal scorers. You've had Leonardo Ochoa, who proved to be a sort of steal at £1 million when he was bought. You know, you've had players like Glenn Murray, obviously, who's scored countless amount of goals at the Amex, brought up his 100 for the club, and is now the, you know, second in the all-time record goal scorers list for Albion. And, you know, there's just been plenty going on, but it's been remarkable to see the club. You know, I've seen the club go from that go from that at the start of the decade, from winning League One all the way to the Premier League and where they are now. And you just would have never dreamt of it then. You just would have never dreamt of it sitting in with Dean, that they'd have gone this far in 10 years. But if, you know, under Potter, I can't see why they can't go, you know, further and hopefully, you know, keep moving up that table as the seasons go on.
Yep, quite the journey it has been, Adam. Our journey, however, for this evening has come to an end. It's been great having you on, boss. Thoroughly appreciate you coming on. I'll let you go and do your 50-50 split between your parents and your girlfriend.
Okay, and Merry Christmas to you all.
Thank you, buddy. Cheers, dude. Lovely stuff there. Adam Stenning, reporter for the Argus in Brighton and Hove Albion, or in Brighton, I should say. Not in Brighton and Hove Albion is not a place. Brighton is a place. Hove is a place. The two combine to make Brighton and Hove Albion. By the way, far too much decade chat going on the fan shows tonight. I've got to say, I'm going to nip it in the bud now. And when we get to El Clasico, there will be no decade chat whatsoever. This, however, is the Brighton fan show here on Love Sport. Next up, we're just going to be looking ahead a little bit more to the game with Sheffield United. We've got James Shield on the line, a massive part of Love Sport now and contributes to many shows, in particular the Sheffield United fan show, which was on earlier this week. He spoke to Charlie Hawkins. We'll be speaking to him in a moment.
Love Sport.
It's the Brighton fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. We are just focusing on the game between Brighton and Sheffield United tomorrow. Now, I'm going to call this a super sub derby, by the way, because Sheffield United have had 5 goals scored by substitutes in the Premier League this season, and that is a league high. And second is Brighton with 4 substitutes. So not only did Brighton play in the M23 derby last week, they've got another derby this week, the Super Sub derby. And let's just speak about Sheffield United here, because quite an incredible season so far this season. And they are on course to be just the second promoted team in top flight history, English top flight history, I should say, to remain unbeaten in their opening 9 away matches. The last team to do that was Burnley back in 1947-48. It is quite a phenomenal run they are on at the moment. They're looking for 3 consecutive wins in the Premier League for the first time since August 1993, for crying out loud. They've just won of their last 10 games in the Premier League. Incredible record that. However, the last time they won, or lost, I should say, away from home was in January, earlier on this year, and that was against Swansea. And like we said earlier there to Adam Stenning, the manager at the time was Graham Potter. He is, of course, now in charge of Brighton. It's 17 unbeaten away fixtures for Sheffield United. What will happen when they visit the Amex tomorrow? James Shield of the Sheffield Express and Star was speaking to Charlie Hawkins earlier on this week on the Sheffield United fan show, and he reckons the possession-based stats surrounding Brighton could mean that this one is a tricky.
I think that, I mean, listen, clearly they're a really good side, aren't they? I mean, I was looking at some facts and figures today, and, you know, I think the last time that Brighton didn't enjoy more of the ball, didn't return at a higher percentage, possession percentage, than any opposition team they played, I think was when they played Tottenham Hotspur at the start of October. And when you consider that they've faced Liverpool and Arsenal and Manchester United in that run, it goes to show, I think, how they'll look to approach this game against Sheffield United. I mean, they're clearly a really talented side. They've got a player up front in Neil Mopay, who I know, again, Sheffield United looked at and
ex-Brentford again
during the close season. So it's going to be a really fascinating game. The other thing as well that I think is really interesting is the last time Sheffield United lost away from home, 332 days ago, was against Swansea City in January. And, of course, who was the manager of that Swansea City side? Graham Potter, who's now at Brighton and Hove Albion. So they'll be looking to gain a little bit of revenge over him, I think, for that, by extending that run further than it already is.
Oh, James, how crazy is that? You know, nearly 365 days since Sheffield United. Look, that's unbelievable, isn't it? When you just ruled that off, we know we said, oh, they haven't lost on their travels. But when you say it and put a number on it like that, it's incredible.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about the fact they're unbeaten away from home in the Premier League this season. Quite clearly they are, because obviously they wouldn't have been, 332 days without a defeat away from home. But, you know, you don't go on a run like that, do you, Charlie, by fluke, you know. And that just goes to show, I think, how well-drilled they are, in terms of that system that they employ. But I also think it just goes to show the commitment and the attitude and the character of that squad as well. So, you know, I think that's a really, really... There's an awful lot of statistics out there, isn't there? But I think that is possibly one of the most revealing ones about Sheffield United at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the only statistic is the one I want from you is a prediction, James. You know it's how we end the show. What do you think on the weekend?
Do you know what? I'm actually going to go for a 1-1 draw.
No, you're not, James. Come
I'm
on.
Gonna go,
Before Christmas.
I'll be rooting for a Sheffield United win. Do you know what? I actually don't think, Charlie, joking aside, I don't think either side would be too disappointed with that. I think Brighton would look upon it as a good point at home against the team above them in the table, and I think Sheffield United would look at it as a good point on the road that stretches that long unbeaten run against a team that's clearly going to be really dangerous opposition.
Well, those were the dulcet tones of James Shield there from the Sheffield Star Express and Star, speaking to Charlie Hawkins with even more dulcet tones there, our Love Sport presenter on the Sheffield United fan show earlier on this week. Going to be an interesting clash, this one. Can Brighton break the record held by Sheffield United currently in the Premier League? Like we said there, 17 games away from home, they are unbeaten. The only Premier League team so far, other than Liverpool, to maintain an unbeaten record away from home so far this season. This has been the Brighton Fan Show here on Love Sport. We'll see you in the new year. Next up, El Clasico.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.